you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to Why Blank Lost. I'm your host, David Bloomberg, and I had a great time in Boston for the live know-it-alls and associated activities. One person who played a big part in all of that was my co-host, Selfie Queen Jessica Lewis.
That's right. If you go on Twitter, you can see some of those fabulous selfies, and I have so many more to post. Just wait.
Yes.
We had
yes.
a great time. So much fun. So much fun.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, it wasn't just you who contributed to the fun. I spent quite a bit of time on all 3 days with a number of patrons as we hit the sights of Boston. We went on a duck tour. We tried to explain to a very confused tour guide just why we were all there. She was like, wait, you flew. Now, imagine this in a thick Boston accent, by the way. You flew across the country and from other countries to watch Survivor.
Right.
Like, you guys can just pay me and come to my house and do that.
One of them came from Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Like one of the patrons. I was blown away and I'm still blown away by how dedicated they are all to not only our hat, but the show in general. Really incredible group of people. I was very appreciative to have a fabulous brunch with a significant number of them on Thursday morning. So thank you for that. It was quite fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also want to thank all the patrons who were a big part of it. And, you know, I know that we're talking to a relatively small group of people now because most people listening weren't there. But I really do encourage everyone to try to make it to one of these live events if you can, because RHAP patrons and fans are generally just an awesome group of people.
Yes.
And really, the only thing I'm upset about is that with so many people there, I wasn't able to meet or talk to everyone I wanted to. When at the end, I saw people posting in the patron Facebook group about this person was there, that person was there. I'm like, where were you? How did I not see you? But that room was just so packed with people.
It was. It was a huge amount of people. And listen, you were sticking with me a lot. So I take some responsibility for your lack of meeting certain individuals because I was dragging you around a lot.
Well,
but I was having
people,
fun.
Yeah, a lot of people would come up and say, okay, I want a picture with you and Jessica.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
and they had to because of our matching shirts.
Yes, that's true, too. So, by the way, I do want to mention one funny story from that brunch you mentioned where I was talking to some patrons and somehow the topic of my work came up and they asked what I do at my job. And without thinking about it, I said, well, I write rules. And they were like, oh, of course you do.
You do write rules.
Yes.
For multiple things.
Yes. So anyway.
Listen, we should mention, too, before we get into all of this. I don't know if anyone really wants one of those shirts that we have, but I was getting a lot of orders. I really was. So if people are serious and they really are interested in those shirts, we might have to work something out. But my sweatshirt was a one of a kind. It's a one of a kind.
Well, I think if people want to go around wearing shirts that say, David, you're right, in big, glittering letters, I'm all for it. I think it is a new fashion trend.
I was so excited that not only did I have that to wear, but that it was glittery pink.
Yes.
It was amazing. Yes. It was so great. So I told the gentleman who made it for me was, as long as it pops, I don't care what color it is. And then I came in to pick it up and I saw that it was bright pink and it was sparkly. I laughed out loud. I high-fived him. It was amazing.
And if anyone is listening and doesn't know what we're talking about, all you need to do is look at either my Twitter or Facebook profile picture and you will see it there.
Yes, I have it on mine as well. So you can enjoy.
Yes. All right. Moving on from the Boston activities, you know, shortly after we recorded the last podcast, in which I had said as part of my predictions that I didn't believe the previews and thought that it would be a boring episode because there was no reason for any Navidi to turn, both Wendell and Kellen independently went on Twitter to indicate that there was going to be all kinds of action. As like, oh, great. Thanks, guys. You could have done that a little sooner.
I know. We were totally expecting kind of a mundane episode. And it was awesome. It was really quite enjoyable. And to watch it in the space that we did with so many people, it's just such an incredible sensation and feeling when everyone's reacting to the episode at the same time, such super fans. It was really, really great. And when you're near all of these survivors who have been on the show, the whole thing was really quite incredible.
Yeah, I had two young millionaires sitting immediately to my right, discussing what they thought was going to happen. And, I thought that was really funny.
It is quite funny. Yeah, I think there was four winners there, right?
Yeah, total of four winners. I just happened to have Michelle and Adam immediately to my right.
Yes, you were in a great selfie distance from me. So yes. That was perfect. Very important.
Yes. So, I'm okay with having missed that prediction because, it did make for a great episode. And, as we watched the episode, one of the first scenes we saw was Desiree getting a confessional. And I immediately posted on Twitter and whispered across the table to you that this was not a good sign for her.
Yeah.
And, turns out I was right. Now, of course, anyone following me on Twitter would know, I have to admit, there were also signs that Kellen or Laurel could be in danger. So we were all biting our nails right up until the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great episode. Really, really great.
So then you have Desiree's Ponderosa video. And in that, she said that she approached the game like she approaches life. If she wanted to do something, she went for it. And I will say, in real life, that can be admirable. Unfortunately, on Survivor, sometimes it's not. So we should all keep in mind that whatever we're about to say here pertains to Desiree's game, not her real life. Because
I love how you're saying we.
Yes.
All right. Listen, there might not be so much of a we as a David.
Whoa, I'm throwing me under the bus already. I forgot you're the nice one.
No, I can appreciate her gameplay from a different perspective, I guess.
Yes. Well,
but we'll get there.
Yeah. I mean, that is what we do here. We go through my Survivor rules, which anyone listening can find at robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. And we see what each player did right and wrong in terms of winning the game. Desiree clearly made some big mistakes in that regard. So let's take a look at why Desiree lost. I think most people expect us to have a little bit to say about the second rule, which of course discusses how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much and, very importantly, backstabbing too soon. So we might as well switch up the order and dive into the second rule first.
Yes.
And, while we're at it, we're going to combine in rule 6, which warns players against being too much of a threat. Because in this case, I think the two are inextricably linked. And rather than trying to sit there and go, well, this is 2, this is 6. No, they're together at this point.
I like that. Inextricably interwoven.
Ooh.
That's good, right?
Yeah.
That's my lawyer talk coming out.
Well, you got to impress the jury. So much
that's
like
that's right.
So, Desiree had a web confessional this week in which she even said that people are not looking at her as a threat and don't want her out. So it had been a blessing in disguise that she hadn't won anything. And everything she said in that web confessional was true.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to my question, which is, then why did you blow up your game by making yourself a threat?
Yes, I agree. That's the problem here. And I know we're going to talk about it to a great extent, but if you're in a comfortable place, you don't need to put yourself in a very uncomfortable place, which is exactly what ended up happening. Like, because there was no rhyme or reason for it. It wasn't like she was being threatened as a potential vote, or that there was some information that she had learned where people were potentially going to be targeting her. It was literally nothing other than her desire to make a big move. And that was it. I need to make a big move.
And she even said that in her Ponderosa video. She said, I went out because I wanted to make a big move.
Yeah.
And that sums up, a big part of it, because far too often we see people saying they want to make a big move and then they don't really know how or why to execute it. They just know that they want to do it. And Desiree clearly didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
First, there's the question of timing. Why do it now if she really believed that she could get Chelsea and Angela?
Mm-hmm.
If the only people she wanted to blindside were Kellen, Wendell, and Dominic, then she only needed three Malolos, now or next vote, or
right.
two for the two votes after that.
Right. Or here's a crazy thought. What about episode 6? I realize that we're going back, but that's the second swap. And at the second swap, if she really was hell-bent on getting rid of Kellen, she could have used James and herself and and Mike at that point in time. And she could have gotten that. She could have gone after Kellen. If she really was desirous of, I don't want to be Navidi Strong, but I don't necessarily want to call too much attention to what I'm doing, that would have been the time, I think, to vote out a Navidi, because it wouldn't have come across as detrimental to her game as it did now at the merge, when Kellen is the one who's really saying Navidi Strong, and kind of holding people to that. If Kellen's gone, that drum isn't getting beaten anymore. I feel like maybe earlier would have been better for her as far as, you know, a long-term game.
Yeah, the thing is, though, she thought she was still in tight with Kellen. It wasn't until the Chris vote
right.
that she realized, oh, they didn't tell me about it, which still makes
and
me scratch
true.
My head. I don't understand how that didn't happen. I, you know what I feel like? That there were just so many people and so many things going on that somehow someone forgot to tell her what was going on.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense why she would have been kept out of the loop.
Right.
It really is very, very odd. If she's that close to Kellen and Chelsea, but she's not being let in on what's really hugely significant, and that's who we're voting for. I feel like either she was purposefully left out because there's something we didn't see, or, yeah, someone just forgot. Like, maybe someone assumed that, oh, Desiree's been spoken to, so we don't need to worry about it. But I find that hard to believe, too, because it's one of those things you always check with your people. You know, you go back, who are we voting for? So everyone's on the same page.
Right. And remember that Michael even said to Angela, you're the only one who is left out, because they didn't know Chris didn't have a vote.
Yeah.
And there were only two votes that were not cast for Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they all must have assumed Desiree knew the right thing. I think it was just a total lack of communication.
But you would think too, though. Yeah, but you would think that if that had actually happened, that Desiree would have gone and said, hey, what the hell happened? Why didn't anybody tell me? And maybe someone could have realized, well, so-and-so was supposed to tell you, or, you know, Kellen was supposed to tell you, or Chelsea was supposed to tell you. And that didn't happen. And I don't know, maybe they could have tried to smooth things over, because that's a really, being left out of a vote is a huge deal. And it really does cause your head to start spinning, because you're like, why didn't anybody tell me? What do I not know what's going on? It really messes with your game. And obviously we saw it, because Desiree jumped off the deep end once that happened.
Yeah, I think she just internalized it. I don't think she asked anyone.
And happened. Yeah.
Yeah, she just started plotting Kellen's downfall.
Yeah. Oh, my word.
You know, but even getting back to the numbers of the situation now, at this timing, she put herself in a situation where her group of Navidi could become the minority.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why she would want to do that. Did she think she just had such amazing powers of leadership that they would all follow her from that point on and then turn on one another? I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it's not just us here saying that either. Mama C said it at the Know-It-Alls that she wouldn't follow Desiree because she didn't seem like she had a plan. Denise pointed out that with a plan like that, she wasn't stirring the pot. She was going home.
Yeah.
And, you know, both Ben and Lauren said on the recap podcast that it was too early for Desiree's move.
It was basically like she promised to bake cookies, but had no ingredients. You know, that's kind of the way I felt about it. It was like, oh, I have a great idea. Because she didn't have anything. Like, she hadn't talked to Angela. She hadn't talked to Chelsea. And she went to these Malolo and sat down and was like, I'm going to make you all cookies. I'll be right back. But I can't make you any cookies because I don't have anybody back. You know what I mean? It was like there was no there was just no forethought to any of it. It was like at that moment she decided this is what we're going to do without actually figuring out if it could be done.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that it kind of combines in besides backstabbing too soon. You have the way that she made the move, because mm-hmm. Brett and others in Boston said she should have pulled one person aside
yes.
instead of
yes.
all four. So she didn't have all four testifying against her. And, you know, Jeremy even added that one-on-one conversations are the best. And mm-hmm. what he didn't say, but which is true, is that by sticking to one-on-one, you control the web of alliances by placing yourself in the center of it. And indeed, when I met Jeremy after Know-It-Alls, he told me that he had listened to why Jeremy won and that I had gotten it 100% correct in discussing his game.
Nice.
So after
David, you're right.
That's right.
After, Jeremy says so as well.
Yes, we could add that to the shirt.
We could.
And so, you know, then following up on his comment on one-on-one conversations, I went back to my notes from the Why Jeremy Won podcast. And he is indeed still preaching the same thing he did in his own game, where he didn't like to have big powwows of people in his alliance at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He met with them individually and then was the middleman to talk to and take info to others. So he controlled the flow of information. He had all the relationships, and that put him in a pivotal spot within the game. He told everyone he had their backs and then played them against each other when necessary. He guided many of the votes. He protected his allies. He targeted his enemies. And all of this, I feel, more describes the game Kellen has been playing, as evidenced by the fact that word of Desiree's treachery came back to Kellen, like, immediately.
Yeah. It's really kind of funny if you look at how the information flowed through all of that.
Right.
It was really kind of making me giggle with who talked to who and in what order.
That game is the opposite, kind of, as the game Desiree was playing, because she had the big group powwow, and it came back to bite her hard.
Yes. Yeah, and you really are. You're not in a good position at all if you're sitting there saying, oh, that's not true, and four people are adamant that it actually happened, and you're the only person saying it didn't. In that moment, it looks real bad, unless the Malolos were plotting really hardcore to get Desiree out, which wouldn't make any sense, because why would they be plotting against Desiree? That's you got to avoid that. If you're going to do something this extreme, you need to make sure that you're not putting yourself in a worse position by even attempting to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the plotting, I mean, as I'm sitting there, it occurred to me, I can't remember any lie this big before, because if Laurel, Jenna, Donathan and Michael really had made up the story, mm-hmm. it would have been one hell of a conspiracy.
Yes.
I can't imagine it would ever hold together on the show. I feel like one of them would have cracked, but they all supported what Laurel said 100%, right up to Donathan's amusing additional commentary at Tribal Council.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it is interesting, though, because in that regard, you do have to, I find it really interesting that they did support Laurel, like 100%. Like they did, because obviously I think this exposes Laurel a little bit and where her loyalties might lie, because she's going to Dominic and Wendell telling them what's happening. So she is kind of in between the Navidi and the Malolo. So I don't know if that's exposed her game to at least the Malolos that are remaining.
It might have. But on the other hand, she basically saved Michael.
She did. And she also kept her name out of the mix, even though she was on the other side of Desiree's yelling and comments, about the big lie and what had happened. Laurel was on the receiving end of all of that, and Laurel still managed to keep it off of her and not become the target that Desiree was then going after. It went back to Michael.
Right. So, you know, one other thing that Jeremy said after his win was that if you are trusted by people, it is a lot less likely that they will want to vote you out. And so I will give credit to Desiree in attempting this, because she told Mike Bloom that while we didn't see it, she had been building a relationship with Laurel and Donathan before she presented the plan, and had been trying to throw dirt on Wendell and Dominic at every opportunity. So once again, a good idea, it was just executed poorly. Because, you know, one thing we know is that on the show, Laurel said, "I just feel safer with Dom and Wendell." And she then said she trusts Dominic and Wendell more than Desiree. So whatever attempts Desiree was making were unsuccessful. I think she just failed to remember that trust is earned, not simply given because you talk to someone a little bit.
Yes.
Laurel had a lot more history with the guys than with Desiree, but it seems to me that Desiree overestimated her success in this area.
Well, and you have to, if you go back and look at, I can't remember what episode it was, but when Michael went to Desiree to try to kind of bring her into the fold and see if she'd be willing to work with the Malolos, Desiree was very quick in that conversation to shut him down and not even want to pay it any attention or any mind. Instead of using it as an opportunity to try to gain trust and try to gain a potential relationship and the whole always say yes mindset, she shut that down immediately. And that's the relationship building that she was utilizing. I think it really comes across as one-sided. Like at that moment, it wasn't important to Desiree, so she's not even going to consider it. But now all of a sudden, when it is important to Desiree, you better all sit down and listen, because this is what's going to happen and this is how we're going to do it. That's not how you end up winning the game, obviously, because you got to give and take. And she wasn't willing to take what was best for other people, or to give, I guess, to other people what was best. She just wanted them to give to her what she needed.
Yeah, and that, you know, that goes back to what I said about her overestimating herself. And I'm just warning you, this is a word I'm going to use a lot here, because I want to go over a web confessional from this episode where Desiree began by saying she didn't understand why Laurel would tell Wendell about Desiree's plan, because this was Laurel's chance to get off the bottom. But what Desiree didn't realize was that Laurel wasn't on the bottom. She didn't understand the real dynamics of the game at that point, including both her own position and Laurel's. Then she said, "Laurel's taking all the heat for this," and later added that she sold the lie well, showing that she really overestimated her success in that area. Desiree continued that Laurel would have guaranteed herself a good spot, which shows that she also didn't really understand Laurel's view on the game of Survivor, because I don't think Laurel wants a good spot. I think she wants to win. And then Desiree next said that Laurel, quote, doesn't think through her moves before she makes them.
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. And then later added that none of the Malolos are really thinking or being strategic players. And kind of like your reaction, that is wrong on so many levels.
Yeah.
But she said it because she thought her plan was so good that by rejecting it, quote, the Malolos dug their own grave.
Yes. And it's almost mind-boggling to me that it's like she has blinders on with this idea of how great her Kellen takedown was going to be, and then adding to it her other plans that she did not get to bring to fruition. You know, she was like, "I had great plans." And unfortunately, we didn't see any of the other great plans, because the first one was not
worked,
so great.
Worked so well, yeah. But I, you know, again, this comes back to that word again. She was overestimating her own strategy and ignoring the possibility that other people could have their own plans. Not to mention, her plan had a major flaw, which you already talked about. She wanted to make cookies and she didn't bring the chocolate chips because she hadn't even talked to Chelsea and Angela.
Right.
Really, that's not even the chocolate chips. That's like the flour and the sugar.
I know. That's like the whole recipe, really. Like, you can't make cookies if you don't have the base. And yeah, that's the whole thing is, if you want to do this, fine. But let's say Desiree's idea was, "Listen, I am going to try to make this happen and I want to go approach all four Malolos." You're better off going to the people that are with you first and say, "Chelsea, Angela, let's do this. What are your thoughts?" And if they are in full support of it, your conversation, if you want to have a group conversation, which I don't think you should, but if you decide to, you're at least going to them with, "Angela and Chelsea and I are all in this together. This is what we want to do. Who's with us?" kind of approach, because then the Malolars are going, okay, it's not just Desiree telling us what to do. Now it's a group of people who are considering a move that we could be a part of. It's a much different dynamic.
Right. And I mean, yeah, I don't even know what else to say about that.
you're flustered.
Because she comes there saying she can get these people, but she has no evidence that she really can.
Right.
But so then, anyway, to get back to the confessional, because this was one heck of a confessional. It was.
I'm packed. Sorry, you're still filibustering.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yes. but you know, she finished up by saying that the others are not making big moves, so they need to get out of her way so she can. Well, I mean, we saw how that ended up.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout this entire confessional, I really think we got a picture of Desiree overestimating her own position and strategic abilities in the game, which led her to scheme and plot too much because she believed she was doing everything right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, kind of to wrap things up, I mentioned earlier that Desiree managed to move from being a complete non-threat, or as Dominic put it, a goat, to threatening the entire Navidi Alliance. And again, as Dominic said it, going against the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by making the move she did, she hit all the points of these two rules. She schemed and plotted too much. She backstabbed too soon. And she became a huge threat that had to be eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let the big boys duke it out. And you just kind of sit back and let it happen. And then all of a sudden there's Desiree at the end. I mean, would she win? I don't know. But it would have been a much different path. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, with a lot of discussion behind us already, we now move on to rule number one, which, of course, says to scheme and plot. Now, since we've already discussed how Desiree did too much scheming and plotting, and we've already discussed her failed attempt at lying, let's use this rule to review how good a job she did at other times during the game. And yeah, I do want to start, though, by mentioning that for what it's worth, Stephen Fishback noted in his blog that he thought Desiree at least approached the Malolos in a good way. What she had to say wasn't good, and the fact that she approached all of them wasn't good, but the way she approached, saying, you know, it might sound crazy, but she was ready to take out the other Naviti, you know, he noted how different it was from the way, for example, Lucy barked orders at David and Ken in your season. Now, do you remember that vote at all?
Yeah, I like to try to not remember it, but yeah, I do. I remember that quite well. Thank you.
And how well did that work out for Lucy?
It didn't work out well for Lucy at all. She went home. I mean, granted, David played his idol to save me, but that's an example of how quickly this game can change, because that was, you know, that whole vote was a response to the previous vote, obviously. And I became the target because of it. But if Lucy had just kind of sat back and let things be, it would have been a much different outcome, I think. But because she came at them so hard, they basically looked at Lucy as she was a substitution for now Paul, who had been kind of, you know, barking orders a little bit. And nobody likes to be barked at. So I think that Kellen should probably reel it in a little bit at this point, too, barking some orders at people. Yeah, you know, because that might not bode so well for her down the road.
Yeah. And, you know, I do want to say there was another comparison I was thinking about between you and Kellen, which was you both had allies coming to you, telling you that other people you thought of were strong allies were coming after you, and you both had to make a decision.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, that for my game, I realized I came across looking like I had no idea what was going on. But you really look at the people you're working with. And my decision was based solely on the relationship I had developed with Sunday. And Sunday and I were exceptionally close. She was my ride or die at the beginning of that game. And that was what I based my decision on, because Sunday was adamant. You're fine. This is that what they're telling you is not true. You are absolutely, because Sunday and Lucy were with me on the decision to target Paul. We were all part of that. That was a group decision, if you will. And to then have to come down to, here's some people that I just started forming a relationship with telling me that this is what's happening. And I have Sunday over here who's winking at me. she's like treating me like my mother. You know, she's like rubbing my back. She was being so sweet and so good about it. And like, Jessica, you're fine. You're fine. Even during tribal council, telling me you're fine and making me believe that it was still Cece. That was based solely on the relationship I had developed with her. And so I can understand entirely Kellen's response to that, because those tight bonds that you form with people, to find out that they can be broken, it's painful. And granted, I mean, that happens in Survivor. That absolutely happens. You have to break relationships or things go south. I get it. But I can totally understand where she was coming from.
Yeah. And I think what we can learn from that is Sunday was a much better liar than Desiree.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. I could not believe it. I was like, this is amazing. That, and then after that, I was obviously suspect of anything she said to me. So,
yes. So, but that was then. This is now.
And, right.
Moving on from the most recent situation. And going back in time through the rest of the season, we did see that Desiree had some good scheming moments. For example, in the fifth episode, Desiree went through Stephanie's bag to see if she had anything from Ghost Island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kellen said in a web confessional from episode six that she was glad to see she'd be with Desiree because Desiree had been very open with Kellen and brought her information about other people previously. So Desiree had been in good with Kellen at the time. And, but we have to note that Desiree's view of their partnership was a bit different from what Bradley and Kellen themselves thought. Because in Desiree's interview with Mike Bloom, she said that she would converse with Bradley and Kellen, and whatever they all decided, well, that was what was going to happen. But if we remember back to our discussion in Why Bradley Lost, he said in interviews that he and Kellen would decide who was going to be voted out and then plant seeds with Desiree and Chelsea until one of them would throw out a name, and then Bradley and Kellen would jump on board.
Yes.
So it sounds like he and Kellen did a really good job of convincing Desiree that she had more pull than she really did, even till now, currently.
Yeah. Yeah, because she did so great, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I do also appreciate one thing that she mentioned in her exit interviews, which I thought was it was an interesting concept. She was telling Dalton Ross that part of what she would do when she was kind of figuring out why people did what they did was that she would picture everybody's point of view and try to figure out why a certain plan would work for them, which I thought, well, that's an interesting way to do it. Like, let's look at this from Jenna's perspective. And why would that move work for Jenna? Let's look at this from Laurel's perspective. And why would that move work for Laurel? But I don't think she did that for herself. So that's the, it's a great idea in theory, but I don't know if she necessarily looked at her own move and said, why is this the best move for me? She thought it was good, I guess, but it didn't work out.
I would say things a little differently. I think she probably did that for herself, but I think that when she was doing it for the other people, her own viewpoint skewed the objectivity of that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Because, I mean, till the end, she was saying this was their best move. So I think she had put herself in their position, or rather what she thought was their position.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So she didn't, I mean, she claims she knew that Laurel was somehow connected to Wendell and Dominic. But clearly she didn't know that Laurel considered them her ride or dies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She believed Laurel was on the bottom.
Yeah.
And
now, how about the prospect of this? I was wondering this, if going to Dominic and Wendell to have a conversation about Kellen, I was curious if that would have been a bad idea, a good idea, because if you're looking at the three of those people and saying these are the three biggest threats in the game, trying to get them to turn on each other might be a better move than trying to get the Malolos to turn on one of those three. It might just be, to stir the pot a little bit, go talk to Dominic about Kellen just to see what, I don't know if that would have been a good plan or not, because obviously Dominic went right to Kellen and told Kellen what was going on. But I think Dominic probably appreciated it because his name's not in the mix. So it makes a little bit, you know, makes life a little more interesting around camp. But I just thought that maybe she could have tried that too, if she really wanted to do this.
Yeah, but I think part of the problem was her eventual goal was to get rid of Wendell and Dominic right after Kellen, because she believed that, I mean, that they had idols, and so she wanted to get rid of them, which actually leads me to what I was thinking as you were talking about that. If she was going to do something like that, a better move would have been to talk to Kellen, because she has a long-term relationship with Kellen.
That's
and
true.
Say to Kellen, Wendell and Dominic are over there. They, you know, they are sitting there with idols. They're controlling the game. We need to surprise them, because that's the other thing. Let's say that this plan succeeds and she manages to vote out Kellen. Well, now Wendell and Dominic are on their guard, which means they're probably playing their idols.
Yep, that is a good point. Mm-hmm.
If she wanted to blindside them, then she needed to blindside them before Kellen.
Yeah, why pick Kellen first? That didn't make any sense to me either, because if that is someone who is super close to you, and you and Chelsea, or she and Chelsea and Kellen have this very strong bond, use that bond to target people who you want to go after. Clearly, Kellen wanted Michael to go home, but, you know, it could have.
When did she want him to go home?
Now.
Now.
Now. Damn it. Now. As you, can I just, I have to say this. That was one of my favorite scenes, as Dominic was sipping what I'm assuming is water in his coffee cup. It was so fantastic, because he was just like, and then he drank again. It was like Godfather-ish. It was great. I loved it. It was very entertaining. So thank you for that moment, Dominic. It was so good.
So anyway, to wrap up, I think the first rule, I do want to mention, after Desiree was voted out, she said in interviews that her only regret was that after the lie blew up, she could have regrouped better and gone back to Laurel to try to convince her. No, sorry, no, you couldn't have. It looks to me like Desiree still doesn't understand what Laurel's position was at that time. Like we were just discussing, going back to her wasn't going to work. They had made up their minds when they blew up the lie. They weren't going to suddenly decide, Oh yeah, on second thought, that's a great idea. Sorry, we blew everything up.
Right.
You know, and on top of that, Desiree said in interviews that, as we've already discussed, she hadn't told Chelsea. And she planned to do so when she didn't have any choice, because she knew Chelsea was tied too closely to Kellen. So even if she had gone back to Laurel, she still didn't have the numbers. And I really find it hard to believe that Chelsea and Angela would have flipped, especially after the blow up.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem with this whole approach, is that you can't save something like that. You need to be ahead of it instead of behind it. And she was way behind it. So yeah, there's no saving it. Like once that happened, and then to add fuel to it by acting erratic, as Dominic said, you know, that's not helping you get what you want either, because people are now noticing you're kind of a little bit crazy, and again, you're barking at them and you're kind of talking at them instead of talking with them, which is what she was doing afterwards with Laurel, with Dominic, with all of them. She was talking at them.
Yeah, you know what, let me skip rule three for a second here, because you brought up something that I think is inherent to the fourth rule, and you know, and for anybody who doesn't know, that's telling players not to let their emotions control them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that Desiree's emotions got away from her when she realized that her whole plan had been blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you know, she confronted Laurel, then she ran from person to person to talk about Laurel being a big fat liar, and she got all upset about it. And, you know, like Rob said on one of the podcasts, she wanted to rush through conversations, and she came across as both erratic and guilty.
Yeah.
And the whole situation reminded me of something that actually happened to me at work a number of years ago. A coworker had lied to me about something we were working on together, which incidentally was writing a rule. and He didn't like to admit when he was wrong, so he ignored corrections I had given him and then claimed his boss told him not to accept my changes.
Ooh.
Our discussion about the topic started to get louder and louder out in the open until he stomped into his boss's office and started screaming about me as I followed behind. So she was sitting at her desk and she stopped him and said, okay, let's calm down here. Both of you explain what happened. He immediately launched into this BS rant and just kept on going. When he was done, she turned to me and asked for my side of things. But my coworker wasn't having any of that. Mm-hmm. When she dared to ask me, he yelled that he wasn't going to stand there and listen to me, even though I hadn't even said anything yet. And he stormed out of her office. So she paused for about a second, and then she looked at me much the same way Dominic looked at Laurel after Desiree had made a similar rant and run off. And then his boss said, well, she figured that settled that, because she could easily tell by his behavior that he was lying, just like Dominic and, well, anyone with eyes and ears. They had to believe Laurel over Desiree.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before even taking into account that Michael, Jenna, and Donathan all said the same thing Laurel had.
Yes. And I don't know if you noticed this too. You probably did. But when Kellen was going to the water well and she was talking to Desiree, there was a group of people with them. And one of the people that was with them, and this is when Desiree was telling Kellen over and over and over again, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Why would I say that? Why would I go against the numbers? Donathan was there, which I thought was quite fascinating, that he was one of the people at the water well when she's trying to convince Kellen that this conversation hadn't taken place, because you're just giving more of a chance for Donathan to be involved in that conversation and correct you and tell Kellen, yeah, no, she really did say all of that. Like, I was there.
Much like my coworker there, you know, they both of them got busted in a lie. And they just got overly emotional about it, and they tried to backpedal. So I do think that that came into play in how she handled things. I will say that she did a few things right in the fourth rule. So, for example, she set aside, you know, her emotional connections, a friendship that she had for Kellen, because, I mean, she'd been with her the entire game. And she said in interviews that she didn't want to do it, but it was the right choice strategically. Well, we've already determined it wasn't the right choice strategically.
Right.
But that aside, at least she was willing to make that separation, even though it was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, I thought, based on a lot of her pregame comments, things that people said about her, and the comments that she made about other people pregame, which were highly entertaining. I enjoyed Desiree's the most. I thought she was going to be a spitfire much sooner. Like, I thought this is going to be someone who is not going to maintain her thoughts or ideas about other people and keep them to herself. So I was actually, like, really surprised at how composed she really was until this episode. Then it was like it all kind of blew up. So I was expecting her to be a little bit more of a spitfire much, much sooner.
Yeah, I guess she could only cork it down so long, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we skipped over rule three. And part of the reason I did that was because I don't really think there's much to say there. But it does tell players they need to be flexible. And I guess by making this move, Desiree showed that she wasn't just going to stick to her Navidi alliance and hope to survive to the end. So a thumbs up for her there, you know, and she did have to do something at some point to stand out if she had any hope of winning.
Yeah.
But this was clearly not the way to go about it.
Yeah, no, I do feel like this whole idea for this season being flexible, I have to go back to something that James said, I believe, in his tribal council before he was voted out. And that was this idea that this is the first season in a really long time. I can't even remember the last time they did it. Well, there was no real theme for the tribes, that it was a theme for the show. And that, so there's no reason to be so connected to the people who are, you know, Navidi versus Malolo, because it's not about you as a person. You got put on that tribe because that was just where you got put. And I thought that that was an interesting concept. And then to see so many people, like so Navidi strong, when it's not about being a hero or a hustler or, you know, a Gen Xer versus a millennial. It's just about being a Navidi. What the hell is a Navidi? You know what I mean?
A Navidi is what you make it, you know, and that's what Kellen and Bradley and some of the others have done such a good job of.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, who gives a shit about Navidi? Well, Kellen does, you know, and if you look at it, I mean, Kellen is setting herself up fantastically well by beating this Navidi drum. And so I understand, you know, that Desiree wanted to kind of cut that off at the knees. But like I said, she probably should have done that sooner if that was her plan. But yeah, I mean, everybody got sucked into this idea of Navidi strong. And it's just been, it's locked everybody into a position that they might have been better off not being locked into.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for some of them, I think it's going to be great. For others, not so much. So.
Right. If you're Kellen, it's fantastic.
For now, anyway.
For now, yes, for now.
All right. So now we will go back to the normal order and go to the fifth rule, which says you have to pretend to be nice and play the social game.
I do like just jumping around. It's very fun.
Yes. So, you know, you mentioned that you thought she was going to be a spitfire and everything else. How do you think Desiree did in terms of the fifth rule?
Well, I think she did great with certain people. And I think we have to go back to that concept of Navidi strong. She was obviously very close to Kellen. She was obviously very close to Chelsea. She talked about the relationship that she had developed with Donathan in one of her web confessionals, that she was able to actually connect with him on a personal level because of their upbringing and their backgrounds, which indicates that, yeah, they spent time talking to each other. And that was a Malolo. So I think that she did try when I think, one, she had a reason to connect with the person, whether they be a Navidi or there's something like a personal connection. But I think we also saw the exact opposite in the relationship she developed with Libby. I just don't think she liked Libby. And because she didn't like Libby, she kind of got very headstrong and wanting to vote Libby out. And I think there was just personal reasons why she didn't like Libby. I think she talked about her in pregame as being the devil in a red dress or something. That's what she said about Libby. So I think that she was, when it was beneficial for her personally, she was great at the social component, but not so great if there wasn't anything. It's like she couldn't even pretend. You know, sometimes people can pretend to be nice. I don't think Desiree can necessarily pretend like you need to when you play this game.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, she did indicate in a web confessional at the Merge that she knew she needed to open up her game and talk to more people, including extending a hand to Laurel and Donathan. And so we saw that and we know she attempted to, but I wonder if that's part of the reason that Laurel didn't really trust her, was she just wasn't good at pretending to be nice. And right. She also had mentioned how she would throw dirt on Dominic and Wendell all the time. Well, okay, let's say you have two friends and then you meet this new person and this new person is, you know, trying to be nice to you and everything, but always makes remarks about your other two friends.
Mm-hmm.
How well are you going to accept that? You know, right. I mean, yes, I know it's Survivor. I know it's not quite the same, but there are still personal relationships. And if you're constantly, you know, talking about someone else's other friends, then you're going to be thinking, well, what is she saying about me when I'm not around?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, now she did also say that she had a good bond with Michael, and James said in his interviews that Michael and Desiree were closer than we saw. Because remember, we talked about that at the time when Michael flipped.
Mm-hmm.
But even with these various hands of friendship extended, it wasn't enough to make any of those people trust her or jump to her side for all of the reasons we've already discussed, and probably adding in what you just said, that even when she got close to people, that just didn't make them trust her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
So, yeah. So we move on now to the seventh rule, because we already talked about the sixth. And it talks about getting and playing idols and advantages. And while Desiree didn't get anything herself, she, you know, I'd say give her credit for finding out about idols held by Dominic and Wendell, as she discussed in her interviews. of course, part of that falls on those two guys for telling other people. And, you know, we'll see if that comes back to haunt them. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't really have much to say about this rule for Desiree. Do you?
I do. I have to add in. Yes, there was, again, and I apologize, I can never remember the episodes, but it was right after Malolo had lost. And I think it was right maybe when James had gone home. I know
which time?
They're scratching their heads. But she and Angela were in the little, you know, shelter, and Michael was gone. And she and Angela were discussing the fact that Michael, oh, he's probably off looking for an idol. Well, and Desiree was like, well, yeah, because it's easy pickings. It's three against one and he's going home next. And nobody got up to go follow him. You know, it was the same thing that we saw with Ben last season, where everybody like knew, well, he's off idol hunting, but nobody went and followed him. It, you know, and that's one of those moments where you're like, why are you sitting? Because there's nothing else to do out there. You might as well get up and go follow Michael, because if he finds an idol, you want to know. So that's the one thing that really jumped out at me with this rule.
Yeah. And you know what? They did it again. They did it again this episode. Both Michael and Donathan went out idol hunting while they were all just standing around as a pack. Now, in this case, they were maybe a little bit more distracted by Desiree's lie blowing up. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, they basically just let them go.
And here's the other thing, too. If we think back to I know she said she didn't know about the Chris vote, but the whole I thought, at least from what Kellen had said, that the idea was we're going to vote for Chris and throw votes on Libby in case he plays an idol. And she's saying, I didn't even know anything about, you know, Chris being the vote. So that wasn't even a thought that she had either. Like, why am I voting for Libby other than I don't like Libby? You know, so there didn't even seem to be any, like, she didn't know about the splitting the votes because of an idol. So I don't really know how much that actually entered into her decisions for her votes.
Yeah, I think she just said something to the effect of that she heard Libby's name.
Yeah.
So maybe someone told her, okay, you're voting for Libby, and she missed the part about because we need to have a couple backup votes for Libby.
Yeah, maybe.
So. All right, we move on to Appendix A, and the key to this appendix is to keep your end goal in mind when you're voting, and whenever possible, to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong, but that wasn't possible to worry about this time, so the tribe just had to worry about their various end goals.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the Malolos, Desiree thought their end goals were to overthrow the ruling Navidi to the point that she risked her whole game based on that idea. Again, like you said, she put herself into their position, and that was what she thought their position was, but she totally misread the situation. You know, I already mentioned how Laurel said on the show that she trusted Dominic and Wendell more than Desiree and felt safer with the two guys. And I also mentioned that in a web confessional, she called the guys her ride or dies.
Yeah.
Especially if they stuck with her for this vote, which they obviously did. Now, we don't know exactly what her end goal is yet, because a lot of people are saying it would be crazy for her to go to the end with them.
That would be so crazy. Laurel, you gotta cut them out. You gotta do something.
I mean, but clearly for now, she's following some sort of plan.
Yes.
Maybe she just believes they can get her through the Malolo hunting portion of, you know, the game, and then she will turn against them. I don't know. But, you know, Donathan is also part of that plan. And of course, the other two Malolos share the goal of seeing the Navidi turn on one another.
Mm-hmm.
Jenna may have something going on with Sebastian. I mean, we know she has something going on with Sebastian now, but you in the game. And, you know, Michael just wants to live to see another day in the game.
Right. Mm.
So, you know, as for the Navidi themselves, Wendell said in a web confessional that he is willing to make big moves and take risks like he does in real life. He could go Navidi strong and be safe, or he could make moves earlier. He learned from the Morgan vote that he needed to check all his bases. And I think in this case, he clearly found that he needed to move against Desiree. And, you know, he also added in another web confessional that while he likes Desiree and connects with her personally, it was in his best interest for her to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's basically answering for Appendix A right there.
Wendell is winning this game. He and Dominic are, they are playing it at a fantastic level, and just looking at their options moving forward, I think they're keeping themselves in a very good place.
Oh yeah, definitely. I agree. And speaking of Dominic, you know, he was clearly worried about the Desiree plan. And as he said, you got to go if you turn on the family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually Kellen was convinced as well. As for Chelsea, well, I thought she would use her immunity win as leverage in the vote. But she was clearly left out of the plan because I don't think they trust her anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if she's there's been too many instances where I feel like people are being left out and we don't know why. And this is another one of those instances.
Oh, I think we know why. I think it's because Desiree said, I have Chelsea. And that got back to Kellen, because both Desiree and Chelsea were in that conversation. And they're both saying, no, we would never turn on you. Well, if you don't believe, if you believe Desiree was lying, you probably believe Chelsea is lying too. And
oh,
I think she,
yeah.
You know, she just got thrown in there right along with Desiree.
Chelsea is Desiree's baggage.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's too bad. We just didn't see it.
Right.
But you've explained it. So.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, like many things with Chelsea, we just didn't see it.
She did win immunity, though. That
yeah,
was awesome.
I know.
Good for
I know.
Her.
Yes. And, you know, and I admit this is not my own joke, but what a perfect challenge for her. Just standing there and not doing anything.
Horrible. You know, when I heard that said by the original orator of it, I was like, that's terrible. And now you're repeating it. That's terrible.
Yes, because it was true.
Well, props to you, Chelsea, for winning.
Yes. So, all right, moving on to Appendix B, which deals with the jury phase, how to seed the jury, and what to do when you get to the end. And as has been the case so far, it still didn't play a role this week either, because everyone was too worried about immediate problems to consider the future jury. So we're just going to skip on by that once again. At some point, this will become important, I promise.
At some point.
Yeah. So we're coming to the end here for Desiree. Before I get to my conclusions, do you have any other final thoughts about her?
Sure. I have a few. I like to call this the rise and fall of Desiree in one episode. That was kind of my take on it. Though we did see some of Desiree's scheming and plotting and relationship building, we didn't see that much of her until this episode where it really all kind of blew up. And I really do think that she got locked into the Navidi Strong idea early on and just ran with that through the game. And unfortunately, it paralyzed her. And she didn't really get to turn the game into her own. And when she tried, she didn't know what she was doing or went about it the wrong way. And it really, obviously, as we saw, it didn't work out for her. And so it's just at this point, she's too far deep into the game. She's too far locked in with Kellen to try to pull something like this off. Like I said, she was trying to make cookies and she didn't have any of the ingredients. And unfortunately for her, it ended up didn't work out so well, and she made herself the target instead of just sitting back and letting other people be the target who already were the target. Let the target stay on that person. Don't put it on yourself if it's unnecessary, which is exactly what we saw here. So she had to go.
Yeah. You know, I mean, several times I mentioned that Desiree thought she had a good plan, the best plan, even.
Mm-hmm.
But I also noted that, here's this word again, she overestimated how successful she had been, whether it was in convincing Laurel that she was more trustworthy than Dominic and Wendell, in convincing Kellen and others that she was telling the truth, in convincing the Malolos that this was the best plan for them. She even overestimated her own position in the game, starting from thinking she had a lot of input along with Bradley and Kellen earlier when they were really just using her, all the way to her final tribal council in which she was arguing with Laurel about who was on the bottom. I'd say Laurel had the final word in that debate.
Mm-hmm.
Desiree schemed and plotted too much and in a way that gave her no plausible deniability when she was revealed. She was backstabbing too soon in trying to take out big players who had been perfectly willing to ignore her up until that point, thus painting a huge threat target on herself. Despite what many players may think, it's the small moves that win most games, not the big moves. One main reason for that is small moves don't have a tendency to blow up in your face like big moves can, and like Desiree's did. She didn't have to make a big move now. But because Desiree had a misunderstanding of the overall tribal dynamics, she made a move that was too big, too soon, and handled too poorly. And that is why Desiree lost.
Excellent.
So, with that, before we get to our predictions, you had mentioned last week on the podcast that you are raising money for Give Kids the World.
Yes.
So I didn't know if you had any updates or wanted to talk some more about that.
I have a fantastic update, let me tell you. So excited that I went to Boston, obviously, for the Know-It-Alls, but also super excited that I met Tony Baloney. I'm going to give him a shout out right now. We met, we chatted, and he proceeded to promise a very large donation if I were to post a particular picture of him on Twitter and tag him, which I did. And thank you, Tony Baloney, for the very large donation. I was quite shocked because that money is going to go to an incredible cause through Hearts of Reality, which is actually celebrating its 10th anniversary. And so for 10 years, Give the Kids the World Village has partnered with Celebration Town Center to raise awareness of and funds for Give the Kids the World Village. More than 100 reality stars from shows like Survivor, Big Brother, and The Amazing Race come to the village to sign autographs, pose for pictures, and party with visiting Wish kids and their families. And the stars raise money and become village ambassadors, sharing the story for fans everywhere. So all of that money is going to go to these children. So the money that Tony Baloney donated is going to those children. And it's going to help me go see those kids and actually hang out with them. We get to have, I mentioned, a pirates and princess and pirates party, even though I was Little Red Riding Hood, which was awesome, by the way. And we're going to go do that again. And it's super incredible. So if anyone wants to donate, please go on to the link. You can I posted it on my Twitter page, and you can donate to not only myself, but any of the people who are attending, any of the reality stars that are going, you can donate. And there might just be something in it for you. I did promise Tony Baloney I would send him a very special something to thank him, which I must add, the individual last year who won my Skype phone call, Matthew, a wonderful kid, I did the same for him. I sent him something as well. So I'm going to do that for Tony as well. And I will probably be doing a Skype call again. So you might get a Skype call, maybe you get an autographed photo. You'll get something. So keep your eyes open for it and help us raise all the money that they need.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So people should keep an eye on your Twitter for that link. And so with that, we get to predictions. And I know,
oh, I hate this.
I know that you're just dying to go first because you have a theory. Because so let's just set this up. Those of us in Boston, they turned off the TVs before we saw what the preview was. So we were blissfully unaware of the upcoming double elimination.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, a new preview came out that said not only is it a double elimination, it's two people will be voted out in two separate tribal councils after a challenge that will have two winners.
Yes.
So you have a theory about this, I believe.
I do have a theory. If you notice, when you look at the actual setup of the challenge, it's very clear that there's a division, five against five, as far as how people are standing. Now, if they're doing an immunity challenge where it's all 10 of them going against each other, it's in a straight line. This is clearly divided, which if you look at the makeup of the tribe, there's five females, there's five males. I think the Survivor world, Survivor gods, Survivor people would like to see a boy win immunity. So I think they're going to set it up that the girls are competing against each other, the guys are competing against each other, so we will have one female and one male winner of immunity. But here's where I then get really messed up. This whole two separate tribal council things, I don't like. Because would they then take those five females and make them go to tribal council and then take the other five and go to tribal council? Because it's not like Jeff said, we're going to have two tribal councils back to back, or there's going to be two tribal councils. It was there will be two separate tribal councils. So here's my thought, and this could be crazy, and I could be completely wrong and reading way too much into it. But wouldn't it be interesting if after the immunity challenge, they then had to draw rocks to determine who's going to what tribal council, since they've been doing this rock draw thing for the Ghost Island like the entire time, and then send five and five? That'd be kind of crazy, right?
I would think if they're going to do a rock draw, it would come before the challenge. I think whether it's men and women separately or random, I think whoever you compete against in the challenge is who you're going to tribal council with.
And that's a great idea too, because I don't see how they would send the females to a tribal council by themselves and the males to a tribal council by themselves. Cause then it's just, I feel like it's a little too cut and dry. You got to mix it up a little bit. So maybe that's what they're going to do, is do the rock draw for who you're competing against. But I really feel like they want to save a guy. And so
Get conspiratorial on me here. You know better than that. Come on.
I know.
You know that they have all this planned out way ahead of time.
Oh, of course they do, right? Yeah.
And so, I mean, the thing is, yeah, they couldn't know ahead of time that there would be an exactly equal number of men and women.
Oh, and that's so true. That is absolutely true.
You know, they might have had a board with different options, like option one, if there are an exact equal number, then we do one tribal council per gender. If there aren't, then we do a rock draw.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could just have said to begin with, we're doing a rock draw. It's a random draw. And wherever you end up, you end up.
I still think it's going to be male versus female, that there's going to be the five girls and the five guys. I really feel like that's what it's going to be.
Well, yeah. And that'll, make things interesting. So if that is the case, what are your predictions?
So if the five girls are voting and the five guys are voting, for girls versus guys, that's what we're doing, right?
It's not really versus.
Well, right. Okay. So the five girls are competing against each other.
That would be interesting too, if the girls had to vote off a guy and the guys had to vote off a girl.
Oh, there's so many options here.
But that he did say separate tribal councils. So
did.
I don't think it would be that.
He did say separate. So see, now I have to find all my notes, because I had all these crazy notes put together about how this is going to work out.
Crazy being the operative.
Crazy, yes. So I feel like if it's going to be the girls, I think Laurel is probably going to win immunity. That would be my guess, that she'll win immunity. And Jenna's going home. If it's the girls, if the girls are voting, Jenna's going home. That's my theory on that. And on the guy side, I really want to believe Michael's going to win immunity and throw a wrench in the works. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Michael's going to go home. Sadly.
Okay. Well, I didn't know what to make of this until I, before we started this, we were chatting a bit about the way it might work out. And when you talked about the gender breakdown, that made sense to me. So I think that is what it's going to be. I think you're going to have a male and a female tribal council. And you know, it's not often that I figure out what my predictions will be before I pull together all my thoughts about why the previous player was voted out. But in this case, literally as soon as I heard two players were getting voted out, I knew what half of my prediction would be. And I even told some people. I think the people in Boston who said, hey, did you guys know there's going to be a double elimination? I said, well, then here's my prediction for one of those people, because I've been saying for weeks now that Chelsea will almost certainly be going in a double elimination episode.
Oh, you have been. Yes.
Yes. And at the time, I thought it would be the type where one player would get short shrift in the first half of an episode. But, you know, as we've been talking about, that's not what's happening here. Even so, they're going to have to jam two tribal councils in. And I still think Chelsea will be the woman getting sent to Ponderosa.
Interesting.
And, you know, it's not just because of editing and her absolutely incredible lack of screen time. She was left out of the Desiree vote. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. And I think she will pay the price for Desiree's mistakes by being lumped in with her. I already mentioned it. It was hard to not jump ahead to the prediction at the time because Desiree told the Malolos that she could pull in Chelsea and Angela. So Laurel almost certainly conveyed that, meaning Kellen, Wendell, and Dominic probably believe she was part of the plan all along.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Chelsea is certainly gone. Then this leads me to the second part of my prediction, which is that Michael will finally get his torch snuffed as well. And that mm-hmm. agrees with you, because if he doesn't win the immunity challenge, he is clearly the biggest target. And, you know, among the men, especially. I think also that Kellen may demand him as a sacrifice if she turns on Chelsea.
Ooh, I want it now.
Right, exactly. We already know that she's worried that Wendell and Dominic may team up with him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if there's time to discuss, you know, before going to these two tribal councils, I think Kellen's going to say, fine, I'll get rid of Chelsea. You had better damn well vote him out now.
Yes. And you know what? I just had a crazy thought because I'm looking at my crazy notes. I found my crazy notes. How much fun would this be? Okay. If it is the female, five females going to tribal council together and the five males going to tribal council together. Let's say Laurel does win immunity, if, as I think she's going to. We know that Donathan also has an idol. And you know what's so fun about Donathan's idol? He actually has two, even though he needs both of them to work. They look like two different, you know, like two idols, because that's what they are. They're actually two. He could actually use those, even if Laurel doesn't win immunity and Jenna doesn't win immunity. Perhaps he just passes that off to Jenna and Laurel and say, here, you both stick these around your neck, because then it's going to force Kellen and Chelsea and Angela to have to turn on each other. Because if they both think those two are playing immunity idols, then it's got to be one of those three. That'd be incredible.
It would. It would also be a hell of a risk for Donathan, because
a huge risk.
If one of those two gets voted out, that they can't pass that half idol back. It's gone with them. And therefore, the idol's gone.
Really? You can't just take it off at tribal council?
I don't think so. I think once it's in the possession, you can't trade them in tribal council, especially after the votes have been read.
Well, then you just have to try to be coy about it. You take it off and you just put it on.
Leave it there? Yeah, right.
Leave it somewhere.
Right. I'm sure Jeff Probst never thought of something like that.
I don't know, but I think Donathan could have a lot of fun with that idol. He really could.
I think so, too. It would be very interesting.
I like it. If anything, it'll be a fun episode.
Yes, it definitely will. So, all right. So now we have our predictions wrapped up. But before we finish, I already mentioned the RHAP patrons and everything else. And so I want to remind everyone that, you can become one. You can head over to robhasawebsite.com/patron to take a look at the various Patreon levels, find out what kind of perks you can get. And of course, one of them is you get first access to tickets for live shows. Plus, you get a discount. And, you know, they also got to organize their activities in the patron Facebook groups, where you and I, of course, both participate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all in addition to Rob doing special podcasts and videos just for patrons and just a whole bunch of other stuff, too. So, again, check out all those possibilities at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And of course, after you become a patron and get to the Facebook group, make sure to say hello to us there.
Yes, please do. Quite fun.
So, time for a hashtag. And I think that you came up with it.
Making cookies?
No, I think no cookies.
Oh, no cookies. Yes, that's good. I like it. No cookies.
So, hashtag no cookies.
Perfect.
And of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall, which is hashtag YXLost.
Hey, listen, I got to ask you a quick question before we wrap up, though. I'm curious, because you made your predictions. Did you use your all-seeing eye?
I used my two eyes.
Listen, you got to bust that out, okay? I got him a little gift. He hates the Magic 8-Ball. So I got him an all-seeing eye, which you're going, if you haven't seen it on Twitter already, you're going to see it. But yeah.
Yes, I believe it is your current image.
Yes, it's my profile picture with the all-seeing eye, but it's just like a Magic 8-Ball, except it's a little different. You're going to use it. I know you are.
Sure. So, to my mind, this was such an obvious prediction that I didn't need to rely on the power of the all-seeing eye.
How much fun is it going to be if you get both of your predictions right? You are definitely
a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy the David, you're right soundbite a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I will. All right. So everyone who is still listening, well, you should make sure to subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts if you don't already by going to robhasapodcast.com/survivor. And we are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed. In both places, you can find all sorts of RHAP content. You've got the Know-It-Alls, the Wiggle Room, the RHAP B&B, etc. Also, if you're buying anything on Amazon, make sure to head over to the RHAP Amazon page at www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP. And remember, you can get your own Magic 8-Ball there.
Yes, you can. My mom got a Magic 8-Ball, by the way. So she's right there with me.
You're spreading the word there.
We need to have the dueling Magic 8-Ball and all-seeing eye. That's what needs to happen.
Okay. So, and remember also that, you don't just have to get a Magic 8-Ball. You can do all your Amazon shopping and,
you can
support RHAP. So, other than talking to us on the Patreon Facebook group, you can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89. Mm-hmm. And I'm at David Blumberg. I have recently been posting some of the pictures from the trip to Boston. I also linked to my Facebook page where I posted all of the pictures from Boston. And, make sure to follow both of us so you can see the whole conversation throughout the week.
Yes, and I have so many more pictures I need to post, but I've had a week, so it's been really busy and a lot. So they'll be trickling out once I get some sleep.
You're saying it's a lot?
Yeah, I'm about done with my week, and it's Sunday, so yes. I feel like this is the end of my week, even though it's the beginning. So
well, that'll be fun then.
I know, right? I'm super excited. Yeah. Long week, but crazy fun.
But crazy fun week.
Yes.
All right. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does the editing on all the Why Blank Lost podcasts. Thanks, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. We got to briefly meet Will from America, and then he played the ukulele for Brett on the intro to Live Know-It-Alls.
It was amazing.
And, of course, thanks to you, Jessica, for another great episode.
Thanks to you, David Blumberg, for allowing me to join you, as always. It was super fun. I definitely had a great time hanging out with you in Boston. And, until next time, I hope you all enjoy listening to this episode, and we'll see you again soon, or hear you. Yep. You'll hear us again soon, I guess.
That's right. They'll hear us again in a week. So
yes.
Until then, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. Played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this